From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we begin Who's Behind the Secret Door, a series of guests popping in and popping out throughout the night. Well, a mutated version of a common cold virus has apparently caused 10 deaths in the last 18 months, according to U.S. health officials. The adenoviruses usually cause respiratory infections that aren't considered lethal, but a new variant strain has caused at least 140 illnesses in New York, Oregon, Washington, and Texas, according to a report issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The illness made headlines in Texas earlier this year when a so-called boot camp flu sickened hundreds at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. The most serious cases were blamed on the emerging virus, and one 19-year-old trainee there died. There are more than 50 distinct types of these viruses tied to human illnesses. They are the one cause of the common cold and also trigger pneumonia and bronchitis. Severe illnesses are more likely in people with weaker immune systems. Look, build up your immune system. That's the key to all of this. As I reported yesterday in the story that was on WorldNet Daily about Prince George's County and kids getting immunized, parents may face jail time if they don't get the vaccines for their kids. In a moment, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny joins us, and we're going to be talking for the entire hour about forcing people to get vaccinations, to get their children's vaccinated as well. Chinese doctors have found a football-size, 33-pound tumor in a woman after cutting open her abdominal area because she was in incredible pain. Surgeons at the hospital spent 30 minutes removing the tumor from the 21-year-old. It measured 16 inches by 12 inches. They think it's benign. One surgeon said that he'd never seen a tumor that large in 20 years of medicine. Went on to say that the woman was lucky doctors found the tumor before it burst. How could you have a 33-pound tumor in your system, in your body, and not know it? A federal grand jury has indicted Barry Bonds, baseball's record home run hitter, with perjury and obstruction of justice, and accused him of testing positive for performance-enhancing steroids. The 43-year-old Bonds repeatedly denied that he knowingly took performance-enhancing drugs during his December 2003 testimony in an investigation that focused on a San Francisco-area laboratory. The drug smuggler who testified for the prosecution during the trials for Border Patrol agents Ramos and Compion has been arrested on charges of bringing more than 750 pounds of marijuana into the United States. According to WorldNet Daily, he was arrested today at the El Paso border on charges involving that has become known as the second load, in which he smuggled a second 750 load of marijuana into the U.S. after he was given immunity by the prosecutor, U.S. Attorney Johnny Sutton, for the first load. The two border agents, by the way, are in jail. Iran has installed 3,000 centrifuges for enriching uranium, enough to begin industrial-scale production of nuclear fuel and build a warhead, they say, within a year. This according to the UN's Nuclear Watchdog Agency. The report by Mohammed El-Baradi, director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, will testify now. U.S. and European pressure for tighter sanctions and increased speculation of a potential military conflict. The future of an Evansville, Indiana-based company that produces a private, voluntary barter currency known as the Liberty Dollar is in question after federal agents apparently raided the facility. The federal officials raided the group's headquarters, seized documents and precious metals. Nobody's really commenting on this, but the group's architect, the head of this company, Bernard von Nothaus, developed the Liberty Dollar in 1998 as an inflation-proof alternative currency to the U.S. dollar, which he has claimed has devalued since the Federal Reserve was established in 1913. The silver medallions are produced by a private mint in Idaho on behalf of Liberty Services, which also issues paper notes, which the group says are backed by silver reserves. There's more to this story, I think, than what is going on. Ahead of the holiday travel crunch, President Bush has ordered steps to reduce air traffic congestion and long delays that have left passengers stranded in the past. The most significant change is that the Pentagon will open unused military airspace from Florida all the way up to Maine to create a Thanksgiving express lane for commercial airliners. It will be open next week for 5 days, Wednesday through Sunday, for the busiest days of the Thanksgiving travel. The new plan will also be in effect for the Christmas travel season. With home foreclosures skyrocketing, the House has voted to crack down on mortgage lenders by forcing them to get licenses, making them more responsible for discovering whether borrowers can really repay, and fining them for steering people toward risky subprime loans. The measures are designed to keep more people from sinking into the current mortgage crisis, where prospective homeowners with shaky credit got mortgages with very low interest rates, only to see those rates rise and bring monthly mortgages up to prices that they couldn't afford. More than 2 million adjustable rate mortgages are scheduled to be reset by the end of 2008. We checked in with remote viewer Ed Dames and his crew with regards to what the heck is going on in the search for adventurer Stephen Fawcett, whose plane went down, we believe, several months ago. Well, Ed says within the next 4 days, he and his crew will pinpoint the location of what he believes is the crash site down now to within 300 feet. And he said, although it's winter coming up there, the crews will not be able to get into that region. They will be hiking there in the location in March. So that's an update from Ed Dames. In a moment, we'll talk with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny about parents facing jail time if kids are not immunized. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, osteopathic physician in the Cleveland area. She's the author of Foul Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think, a book that details the connection between environmental pollutants and the risks of influenza pandemic. Dr. Tenpenny, known for her expertise and ability to prevent and present scientifically sound information regarding vaccination hazards. She's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Sherry, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, George. I'm wonderful. Thank you very much.
This story in Maryland is absolutely shocking to me. Forcing parents possibly into jail, definitely fining them if they don't get their kids immunized.
Yeah, when I got this news story that came across my desk 2 nights ago, George, I have to tell you, in the 7.5 years and more than 8,000 hours that I put into researching this problem, I don't know that I've ever been quite this upset about seeing that this has been coming down the pike. They've been laying the backdrop for mandatory vaccinations for a long time, but this implementation strategy that they're using in Maryland is really, really drastic.
Do you think it's a test for the rest of the country?
I believe that it very well could be, because mandatory vaccination is something that I believe is coming into the forefront, that people are becoming more aware of. I think there's been some rumblings in the medical journals that have been talking about doing away with exemptions. And even though all 50 states have exemptions that you can exercise, there's 19 states that have philosophical exemptions. All states except West Virginia and Mississippi have religious exemptions. And then all 50 states have medical exemptions, even though they're hard to obtain. There's been some rumblings recently about doing away with the exemptions because more people are becoming aware of the problems with vaccines and are deciding not to vaccinate or to selectively vaccinate. And I don't think that the pro-vaccine community is very happy about that.
The elected officials, the school board members that are approving these forced immunization rules and laws, are they doing this consciously because, you know, maybe they're getting paid under the table by Big Pharma? Or do they just not understand, the possibilities that you don't have to have a vaccine? Or also, are they just ignorant of the fact?
Well, it could be any combination of those three things. I think that most people are brought up from the backdrop of vaccines are safe, effective. They protect you from getting sick and they cause no harm. I think that's the general overall thought of the way that people in our age group was brought up, probably our parents, and that's just sort of been passed along. And quite frankly, all of the speaking that I do about vaccinations and telling people that there's another side to the story, usually the first response that I get back from parents is, or from the community at large is, well, I might have to get them vaccinated because that's the only way I can get them into school. And so I think from that point, you know, when you start saying, well, there are some options that you can refuse, then suddenly it's like there's an entire different ear to the information.
Somewhere out there, Sherry, Dr. Tenpenny, there's a person who's saying, look, I get my children their vaccinations. I don't want them in school next to some kid who hasn't been immunized.
You know, and that's such a lame argument, because if vaccines really work and your child is vaccinated, then why should you care if you're sitting next to an unvaccinated child that might get sick?
It's one of those gotchas, right?
It really is, because the parents that are deciding not to vaccinate, I believe that the vast majority of those parents have done their homework. They've investigated the pros and cons. They've looked at the health side of the equation of what they can do to keep their children healthy, as opposed to just looking at the prevention of disease side of the equation where the vaccines fall. I don't believe that any parent makes that decision to not vaccinate just from a cavalier perspective. I believe that they do their homework and they make the decision that this is something I don't want to do. I believe that the risks of the vaccines are greater than the risks of the diseases, and I just don't want to do it.
Parent could face up to 10 days in jail in this county in Maryland. Do you actually think that prosecutors are going to go after parents if they don't get their kids immunized?
Well, I do, and I was listening to an interview that was earlier today on Alex Jones' show, where he actually talked to the state attorney from Maryland, who said, "This is what we're going to do," and they're going after it from a perspective of truancy. But it's such a double-edged sword. I mean, on the one hand, they're saying, "Well, you can't get into school because you haven't been vaccinated," so the kids are staying home. So now they're saying they have a truancy problem, but the only way to overcome the truancy problem is to get them vaccinated. So it's a very backward argument. And when you look at the two vaccines that they're requiring, the chickenpox vaccine and the hepatitis B vaccine, you really have to wonder. I mean, back when all the smallpox, mandatory smallpox things were going on that you and I spoke about way back in 2001, or when they're talking about maybe a bird flu pandemic, that they've got huge communities at risk. You know, that's one element that people start to talk about. But in order to get your kids into school and you need these two vaccines, the chickenpox vaccine and the hepatitis B vaccine in particular, I think that they're making a lot of noise over nothing.
The state's attorney, Glenn Ivey, says, hey, you know, my goal is to get the kids back in school. I really don't want to put parents in jail, but he will if he has to.
And I thought that the argument of saying, well, you know, Maryland has a religious exemption and the parents just have to exercise it. Well, if that was the case, then when they were sending out all these letters and trying to get these parents to vaccinate their children and having free clinics for vaccinations, I would be very interested in knowing if all of those 1,600 or 2,200 parents, whichever news story you want to believe on the number, I was wondering if they got a letter in the mail that offered them an exemption form.
What happened to all the vaccines during the scares of years ago that the government purchased? Well, then they buy like hundreds of millions of shots.
Well, in the CDC's annual budget, which I think is a really interesting number of how much the U.S. government spends on vaccines on an annualized basis, the U.S. government is the number one purveyor of vaccines. And in 2007, the CDC's entire annual budget was $8.2 billion. And nearly 32% of that money, or $2.6 billion, is allocated to the National Immunization Program. Inside of that budget is a $300 million line item to buy a 6-month stockpile of the routine pediatric vaccines. So they're worrying about if they run out, if there's a problem with production. So they've got that. They've got, you know, billions of dollars of stockpiled of this bird flu vaccine that came out 2 years ago, which, you know, supposedly that's only got a 1-year shelf life.
I was going to say, how long do these vaccines stay?
Well, the flu shot, as we know, has to be something that they regenerate and remanufacture annually, and there's been yet another publication, another research publication in JAMA that just came out in last month's issue, which is the fifth one that I'm aware of, that says that flu shots don't work. And yet each year they come up with a new batch, a new set of viruses, and this year the flu shot, there's two of the viruses that are in there that they already think don't match the viruses that are in circulation.
And a friend of mine who was going to go get a flu shot. I don't get one. His doctor told him, look, if you haven't had the flu in the past, don't get one.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
That's pretty dramatic.
Good. That's an enlightened physician.
Look, are we being irresponsible by talking about vaccines in a negative way?
I don't think so. I don't think so, and I think it comes down to the question of, do vaccines really work? And I believe that there's a lot of that the entire vaccination industry and the process of vaccination were started on several false premises. One is the main premise is that those who believe in vaccines and that we should all get them work from a premise that we are all going to be exposed, and every single person that gets exposed is going to get sick unless you've been vaccinated. And we just know that simply isn't true. I mean, if there's an outbreak of strep throat or even the flu that's going on in say, a classroom at school, not 100%, all of those kids may be exposed, but not all of them get sick. So it starts from a bad premise, and that it doesn't take individuality into play. It doesn't take family histories. It doesn't take other health histories into play. And we use this as a one-size-fits-all policy for every child from every family, from every educational backdrop, from every food type source that they eat. And I don't believe that that's the way that it should be done.
Sherry, when the polio vaccine came out, did that truly eradicate polio?
There is much evidence that shows that from the CDC's website and from a variety of researchers who have looked into this very intensely, that the polio epidemic had peaked and was about 75% gone and well on its way out before the polio vaccine was ever implemented in this country.
You are starting a coalition against mandatory vaccinations. Tell us about it.
Well, I am, and this sort of came as another thing that happened to me a couple of weeks ago when I saw that they are starting an entire new industry from the CDC. They're starting this thing called People for Immunization. That's a CDC subcommittee that's forming, and it's supposed to be a 501(c). They're trying to get parents to donate money for this cause. They're claiming that they're not going to get any pharmaceutical drug company backed support in terms of economics, and that they are going to be the science-based, credible, and clear information source, this entire new People for Immunization. And when I saw that, I said, you know what, there needs to be a pushback, because there are plenty of people out here who want to say, we need to not have mandatory vaccination. Now, note that the organization I'm going to try to put together, this coalition against mandatory vaccination, goes along with my premise that people should have a right to choose. But I do believe that even people who want to vaccinate may choose to say, you know what, I don't think this needs to be mandatory, and that people who don't want to should have that right.
That's the whole key. I mean, they're going to start putting us in camps if there's some kind of epidemic that may have been created by them.
Are they going to put us into camps?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have to kind of wonder. I mean, if they're willing to put, 1,600 parents into jail over the chickenpox vaccine, it makes you really wonder what would happen if something more serious came along.
What about this variant virus that they say has killed 10 people? Is that considered something for us to worry about?
You know, I don't know a lot about that, George. I just sort of heard about it at the top of your hour when you were giving off the news there. I hadn't really been following that story, so I don't think I can really comment on that.
Okay, very good. If you get up to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's website, which is drtenpenny.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you who want further information about vaccines, the history of vaccines, she's got a special offer just for you, which lasts only through Sunday. So you can get all that information on the coasttocoastam.com website as well. We're going to keep Dr. Tenpenny for phone calls when we come back. I know a lot of you are truly concerned about whether you should get your children vaccinated or not. we're not your doctors, we're not your advisors, this is something you have to decide. But we're going to keep her for phone calls because you might be able to get some more information that is important for you as you make your decisions. And I really feel for those parents in that area of Prince George's County in Maryland, the 1,700 parents whose kids have not gotten the required shots. You know, that's got to be very frustrating, being so opposed to it and then being forced to have to do it. We'll be back in a moment. Quick, in Brazil, they find a huge oil reserve, 10,000 feet underground, 10,000 feet, 5 to 8 billion barrels, they're estimating. So goes it for those people who think about the peak oil theory. I still think this planet makes its own oil. Our guest, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, will take your phone call. Sherry, are they still putting mercury in these vaccines?
Most of the mercury is out in most of the vaccines. Mercury is still in the multi-dose influenza vaccine, so that the vials that have multi-doses have it. There are still traces in some vaccines, but it's usually in the manufacturing process. You know, George, from the time that they started talking about mercury being such a big issue, and I really think that a lot of the anti-mercury people have done a really good job at bringing the autism issue and mercury to the forefront, but from the beginning of time that they started talking about that, my position has always been, yes, mercury is a bad thing, but just because the mercury out, that doesn't mean the rest of the things that are left in the vaccines are safe, and that this whole issue of childhood illness and of the autism, it's more than just the mercury.
You know, it's unfortunate too, because you just don't know, Sherry, who do you trust?
Well, you know, it's interesting, George, because one of the things that I've said is that I truly believe that parents have the ability to figure this out with some guidance. I believe there's a lot of smart people out there, and I don't think that doctors have a corner on medical literature and medical information, and the whole paternalistic aspect of conventional medicine, that just even recently in the last 2 days, there have been articles that have come out saying that it was in Times Magazine and in Newsweek saying that, you know, parents just don't understand and doctors have to figure it out for them. And that's why physicians have become so aggravated when you talk to them about vaccines, because they think they know best. And I really believe that parents can figure it out. When you hear mothers say things to you like, I laid my baby down on the table and I got this gut-wrenching feeling that I was doing the wrong thing, then you know that you need to trust your intuition about that.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. And where are you calling from?
Baltimore.
All right. Right there.
Dr. Tenpenny, I think you're so wrong in this, and you're not seeing the large picture. The parents can't see the big picture of this. It's called public health. Without public health, we would have half the population in this world.
Well, you know what? There's been this big battle back and forth about public health, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it gives me an opportunity to say what I think about that, is that there's been this interplay between the right of the individual versus the good of the whole that has been going on since the beginning of public health and the first mandatory vaccination law that was passed in the UK in 1853. And the right of the person is pretty self-explanatory, but how does public health really view the good of the whole? I mean, their position has always been, there's been this balance between cooperation and trying to get people to understand the value of vaccines without ever looking to the fact that many of the diseases were gone before the vaccines were, or mostly on the way out before the vaccines were implemented. So there was this balance, always this balance between cooperation and coercion. And the cooperation of trying to get parents to go along with the program, to try to like subserviate their rights to the good of the whole, and that was a pretty good balance up until about 1963, when they started talking and using more of the public campaigns to characterize parents who didn't vaccinate as medically and morally neglectful. And so now what we've gone is way over on the other side of not having cooperation at all, but going completely into the realm of coercion. And I think that that's where public health has really been having a problem. And I think that there's a lot of things from public health that we really need to look at, because I do believe that the entire issue of public health needs to be more than just high vaccination rates and low infection rates.
Sherry, Matthew from Columbus, Ohio writes and says there's a whooping cough out outbreak in Worthington, Ohio. He says already over 50 kids have it, and they want them to get these pertussis boosters. Didn't they already get that shot when they were babies?
Yeah, they got pertussis at 2, 4, 6 months. They got it at a year of age, and they got it when they started kindergarten. And even the CDC can't seem to figure out why it is that fully vaccinated children why the vaccine seems to be wearing off and not having any role in protection. And when you really look at the pertussis vaccine and you look at the information, the most of the kids that are vaccinated are the ones that come down with pertussis have mostly been vaccinated, and that's been documented in the medical literature for years. And they're pushing forward the whole issue about booster shots because they think that maybe they're wearing off and we need to reboost it. But when you look at the vast majority of kids that get whooping cough recover in a matter of weeks, yes, it's a bad illness. People don't like to see their kids sick. They don't like to see them coughing and coughing up phlegm and all this stuff. But I do believe that they will get over it.
Well, and there's a fear here, Sherry. I mean, you see your child sick or the possibility that your child could get this illness. You want to do something about it. And so if you really don't understand vaccines, that's what you do. You take that easy way out, don't you?
Well, and I think you said it just exactly there, right there, George. You sort of take the easy way out because the assumption is that if I get vaccinated, my child will not get sick. And that's just simply not true. I mean, even in the vaccine literature, it says, well, you can still get sick. There's no guarantee. Nothing is 100%. But if your child gets sick, they won't get a full-blown case of chickenpox or measles or pertussis. But you know what? They still get sick. So my position has been, in terms of getting people to look at the broad picture of this, is that you can get vaccinated and still get sick, and while you're getting vaccinated, you assume the risks of the vaccine. Or you can take a health-wise perspective, do better things with your kid's diet, get them to go to bed on time, make them go out and exercise, have them drink more water, wash their hands, eat good food, stay away from the trans fats, stay away from the sugar, and try to keep them healthy from that perspective.
Wildcard Line, you are on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is David from San Diego.
Hi, David.
And I'd like to ask the doctor what she knows about the situation in Africa with the World Health Organization and the IMF ganging up on a few of the African countries, forcing them to get the polio vaccines, as the leaders of the countries were saying that they were accusing them of genocide because the polio vaccine causes sterility in a certain percentage.
Well, I do know a little bit about that because I've followed some of the polio campaigns for the last couple of years. And when they have national immunization days, what they're doing is they're vaccinating more than 400 million children across Africa and Southeast Asia with multiple doses of the oral polio vaccine, for which they may have already had multiple doses because there aren't records kept there like they are here. And by using the World Health Organization's numbers, they are probably creating 80 to 90 cases of vaccine-induced polio and paralysis just by using the oral polio vaccine alone, and by saying that you can get one or two cases of paralysis for every 2 million doses of vaccine. If you do that math, that's about 80 cases of polio across the country from the vaccine. And I've gotten several emails in French from people in that country that I've had friends of mine to translate for me, and that there is a much higher risk, if you really read the polio literature, that there's a much higher risk for giving the oral polio vaccine to malnourished children and adults and to those who may have the AIDS virus inside of them in terms of having a complication. So again, we're looking at a one size fits all in every country under every circumstance, and that the most important thing is to vaccinate as opposed to looking at the health of the individual.
Scare people first, Sherry, and then they'll buy later, won't they?
I guess that's a good comment, George. I like that.
First time caller line, where are you calling from?
This is Sean in Washington State.
Hey, Sean, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, good evening.
I'm the father of two young children, and when I was first looking into this issue, I saw arguments on both sides, pro-vaccine and
pro-choice.
Yeah, and so, you know, I went and I looked into it, and what I decided to do was actually go and read the product inserts that were in these vaccines. And then I went and did some research on the Internet and found out that OSHA, for example, a federal agency, was saying that some of the chemicals in there, some of the preservatives like formaldehyde and a couple of other ones that I couldn't even pronounce, were in there in levels that wouldn't be considered safe in the workplace. And so I decided not to use those vaccines. And my concern really is with putting those preservatives in the vaccines. And my question, I guess, is it possible to manufacture these vaccines so that you don't have preservatives in there that have to that create such a long shelf life?
Well, that's a great question, and I know that there's one of the arguments about vaccines has been, instead of like not doing it, what can we do to make them safer? And I know that the National Vaccine Information Center has been putting out that argument for a long time. What can we do to make safer vaccines? The manufacturing process does a lot of things, like formaldehyde and 2-phenoxyethanol are used to inactivate or use it to inactivate live viruses. Now, if they can come up with some other way to make that happen, maybe irradiate them or something, maybe they wouldn't have to use those. When they put those in there, there are milligram amounts, you know, that accumulate over the multiple doses. And that's one of the things that I've been working on, is a table that sort of shows that, how much they're actually getting. There's a lot of other, like, antibiotics that are added that are to take out stray bacteria that may end up in the batches. They use animal cells to grow a lot of the viruses, so they put the bacteria in there, but the animal cells actually end up in the vaccines. And I talk about this a lot in my book when I talk about the fact that the FDA and CBER, which is the organization that starts the process, looks at those animal cells, and they tell the manufacturers to do their best to get the animal cells out, even though they know that some of them remain in there. So it's like a lofty aspiration to think about trying to make the vaccines safer and less chemicals, but the way that they're made right now, I think it would be extremely difficult.
Let's go west of the Rockies now. It's your turn. Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Norton. Good evening, Doctor. I'm calling from El Centro, California.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to comment about something that happened in 2003. I graduated with my BA from San Diego State University at a satellite campus in Calexico, California. But they told me that they weren't going to let me graduate unless I got a vaccine. I don't remember what it was. It was just like 4 weeks before I graduated, approximately. They gave me a little card to prove that I had that vaccine. I was just wondering if you had ever heard of anything like that. You know, anything that happened like that, and you know, what can we do about stuff like that? Basically, it seems like that's violating something, like our rights or something. I don't know, it just doesn't feel right.
Well, you've got a good point there, and one of the things that I'm seeing is that I think the next hurdle that the pro-vaccine people are putting into place that is going to be quite difficult to get around, and is the going from high school into college, and getting into colleges are going to be requiring more of the adolescence vaccines. There's about 20 adolescent vaccines that are currently in the pipeline for the 10 to 18 year old age group, and they've got more vaccines in development for adults. I've seen it now in a lot of the consults that I've done, that parents are having difficulty in getting their kids into college. I've had people say they've had difficulty getting into chiropractic school, osteopathic medical school. I actually had someone tell me the other day that they needed to get an MMR when they went to law school. And so I think that this is going to be the next level of where the pharmaceutical industry is going to start putting the state mandates into these legislators, which is sort of one of the things that you said before, George, about are these people just uninformed? I think they are. I think they just don't know that there's another way, there's a broader picture, and they've never seen a vaccine that they don't like and that they don't get paid for. And so I think I have heard some things like that, not specifically about getting a vaccine to graduate, but I've certainly heard some things about having problems getting into college and professional schools without vaccines.
Jim from Chicago writes, Sherry, your guest has obviously never spent time at a pediatric hospital She's doing a great disservice to the public, advocating people avoid vaccinations.
Well, it's becoming an ever larger argument, George. It really is. And I think that, and you know, I've actually started another little thing on my website, which is about pediatricians who bully. And yes, I have spent time in a pediatric hospital several different times when I was a medical student and when I was an intern and into my professional life. And so I think that, you know, it's about this bullying that is happening inside the pediatrician world. Now, granted, I'm not just slamming pediatricians. I think there's a wonderful role for pediatricians. I think that there's some wonderful doctors who do wonderful things for their pediatric patients and their parents. But I started a thing, George, a couple of weeks ago because I got an email from a parent that said that their doctor was now charging an additional $20 for each child when they started asking questions about vaccines, either to question doing them, delaying them, or choosing about them, that they were implementing this as an annoyance fee, and that now they were going to have to pay $20 extra if they started questioning vaccines. And I think that it really kind of aggravated me, and so I sort of put a thing out onto my MySpace account and a couple of other places and said, if any of you guys out there, any of my friends, have been bullied by pediatricians, within 5 days, I got more than 200 stories.
Gee.
And so I think that there is because parents are questioning, because they're reading, because they're learning, because they read the package inserts, because they get this information, and I do believe that in the medical profession as a whole, it's sort of like in our DNA that we're supposed to be pro-vaccine, and we've never spent the 8,000 hours that I've spent looking at it. And so there's this sort of this polarization that is happening, and I think that physicians need to open up and broaden out their perspective and look at the entire message instead of just what they're taught.
Let's try to squeeze one or two more calls in. Wildcard Line, you're up with us.
Yes, hi, George.
Hi.
My father was a doctor, and I know he didn't approve of a lot of these immunizations. Hmm. He would, let us have, a typhoid shot, if we have to go swimming in the river or whatever, in case we stepped on a rusty nail from a board or something. But, I mean, I understand when the injections were first being made, the doctors that did this said that the mercury was to be taken out before anybody received an injection.
Interesting.
Well, it was supposed to be, and I think that just the vaccines in and of themselves, I mean, that's sort of an issue, an independent sort of discussion. But when you look at how many vaccines kids are now getting, I mean, I hear from a lot of times when parents say, well, I didn't get that many vaccines, and I have teenagers, and I don't remember them getting that many vaccines. Well, you know what? That's the truth, because as recently as 1985, kids got 33 vaccines by the time they started kindergarten.
33?
No, that's not 33 shots, George. It's 33 vaccine antigens plus the chemicals.
You could have had three or four within each shot.
Right. Like MMR is in one shot, DPT is in one shot, et cetera. Now, by the time kids enter kindergarten, if they get all of the recommended vaccines, they get more than 100. And with adding the HPV vaccine to the this 10 and 11 year olds, now they're getting about 120, because it's four viruses times three shots. That's 12 more. I mean, they're getting more than 100 vaccines plus the chemicals by the time they start kindergarten. I do not see how any medical professional or thinking person could think that that's totally benign.
Well, in the big issue, of course, Sherry, is what we started with at this hour, and that was forcing families, forcing parents to immunize their children. That, to me, is the big issue. Parents should be allowed to make up their own minds.
Well, the other thing I think is very important about this issue, George, and just kind of a closing comment is, you know, we've had all of this activity in the autism world for about the last 5 years. We've had big activists, we've had television commercials, big conferences, we've had marches. And I think a lot of people who don't have autistic children or an autistic child in their family, they kind of look at that and say, well, that's over there. You know, that really hasn't touched me. But now that they're vaccinating kids for chickenpox and hepatitis B, these are healthy kids, and they're threatening jail and fines, that now this is really personally affecting everybody, and people who hadn't even probably thought about the vaccination issue being an issue are now thinking about it.
Well, we're not going to let it die, not at all. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, all her information is linked up there at Coast to Coast AM. Secretdoctor.com. When I come right back, we begin Who's Behind the Secret Door?